Listen. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the super fans.
But they are who we thought they were.
Hi, everybody. It's Pod Vader here with a very special international edition of Next Fan Up, specifically because it's International Podcast Day. I'll be talking with my good friend Nat Coombs. He's a presenter across the pond for the BBC. We're going to talk about the first of the England games this year in the NFL. That is the Jets and the Dolphins kicking off Sunday morning on the East Coast. That'll be at 9:30 a.m. on England time. That's 2:30 p.m. So wanted to present this special show. It's a 25-minute interview all about the NFL in England. I hope you enjoy it. Be prepared for tomorrow's episode of Next Fan Up, where we'll preview all the games and we'll feature all of our favorite Australians from England, including Australian Simon. So sit back, kick back, and enjoy this special edition of Next Fan Up. All right, everybody. Hi there. I am glad to be joined by my good friend Nat Coombs in England. He is going to be anchoring the Wembley games for the BBC. He also is the host of the AmeriCarnage podcast, which you can check out right now on iTunes. Nat, welcome to my show.
Great to be here, Jay. I think it's a good point. Go and check it out right now. Stop listening to this show.
Wait a
and
second.
Go. Actually, no, that wouldn't work. That wouldn't work, would it? So, okay. Maybe check it out after the show. Yeah.
Exactly.
Good to be here. How are you, man? How's life?
Oh, it's going quite well. You know, I've got my own podcast now. I'm talking football with, you know, a fan from every NFL team. You know, it couldn't be easier.
Well, as Pod Vader, it's only right and proper you have your own podcast. And I've, you know, personally been lobbying for that for years. You know, I know a number of the British pod contingents will be delighted to hear that you've got your own show now. So good on you. Good stuff.
Awesome. Let's talk a little bit about some football over in England, because there still seems to be this major push to make the NFL work in England. And I guess that's the first question I'll ask you. Is it working? I mean, you're doing a huge show on the BBC about this, so something's obviously clicking.
Yeah, I mean, it is a question that lots of my American friends and colleagues ask. And I guess the answer is slightly ambiguous, right? In the sense that I think if you're asking if it's working, you've got to define what success is, what success represents. American football, the NFL, is never going to replace football, soccer over here. It's not going to happen. But much like what's happening in the States with regards to the NFL dominating things over NBA and MLB, whereas you could argue 20 years ago it was a more level playing field in terms of interest and broadcast ratings and everything else. You know, the NFL has surged ahead, right? That's very similar to the UK, where football, I guess, has always been, I suppose, the most dominant sports, but that's with the Premier League and the money that's gone into the game. That's been exaggerated and accentuated a lot over a similar period of time, really. So it's very much football and then everything else. And I don't mean that disrespectfully to the other sports, because, you know, like NBA and MLB and plenty of others, they have a fan base, but football's the main sport. So the NFL's never going to replace that. But then I don't think it's trying to. What I think it's trying to do is jockey for position amongst the 6, 8, 10 other sports, which in this country you'd include rugby. Cricket is still a big sport, which is quite similar to baseball in many respects. Formula One racing has a big cult following as well. So I think the NFL is looking at it and thinking, well, we can survive quite happily in at the top table, you know, even if we're 6th, 7th, 8th on the pecking order. And, you know, so far, so good. I think if you look at the success of the international series, many people considered it a curious event to go and see. Now it's become a staple. There would have been 4 games this year if it wasn't for the Rugby World Cup, which is a huge tournament which is going on over in England and Wales at the moment. So I think that we're only going to see more games over here. The coverage is both strong on both terrestrial television. You mentioned the BBC and cable television as well, Sky, which is one of the big sports cable outfits over here. So yeah, it's in good shape if you put it in the context of what its ambition is, which is to be fifth or sixth, not the dominant sport.
So fifth or sixth, because my question would be, who's number two? And is the NFL approaching number two?
Well, that's a good question. And I suppose a little bit like the states, it depends on which part of the country you're in, right? You know, you know, rugby has two different codes. You have rugby union, which is very big, but also rugby league, which is particularly big in the north of the UK, north of England anyway. So I say rugby's kind of up there, cricket as well, but cricket depends on the matchup. And by that, I mean, you have a county cricket circuit, which are professional teams, right? Which depends on the code of cricket again, because you have different types of game. There's a newish version of cricket called 2020 cricket, which is quite a fast, explosive game where basically each side gets 20 overs and just smashes the ball as hard as they can. 20 overs, they get 120, they face 120 balls each and try and score as many runs as they can. So it's like cricket on amphetamine.
Right, because cricket is like weeks, right?
Yeah, feels that way. You know what? The test matches, which I think are probably still, it's an interesting question. Again, it depends sort of where you are, but there's a test match takes place over 5 days, right? Typically, or up to 5 days, a maximum of 5 days. Both teams bat twice. And the style and the approach to that game is very different in the sense that a batsman, a batter effectively, will have a much more studied, cautious innings than if he was playing 2020, where, as I say, each team only faces 120 balls, pitches, max. So they just typically just try and hit the ball as hard as they can each time. So test match cricket is a more considered affair. Interestingly, I think test match cricket is in many respects often closer to baseball. People make an assumption that because a baseball game is typically 3 hours, then it's quite a lot like 2020, because that is usually around the similar length of time. But actually, the passage of play in a test match between a bowler, a pitcher, and a batsman is often more similar, I think, to what you see in baseball. It becomes a real game of chess and a war of attrition between the two as they try and outpsych and outthink each other. Whereas 2020 is much cruder. But if you take something like the Ashes, which is the name given to the England versus Australia test matches, and the crucial distinction is that test matches are international games. So the 2020 one day internationals and county cricket, they're all club. It's like a club circuit, although national teams do play those as well. But test match cricket is only played by international teams. So it depends who's playing. If England are playing Australia, it is the biggest ticket in town. It's massive. It's kind of like, the World Series, I guess, right. That level of interest nationally.
I'd probably put it more on the World Cup level for Americans. Not obviously for the rest of the world. For Americans, when the World Cup comes around, Team USA is the biggest thing in town. But when the World Cup, World Cup goes away, we all seem to forget that soccer.
It is interesting. Cause I was going to ask you the same question, sort of reverse back, really. Because clearly football, America's a changing country, right? And football, as in soccer, is what happens when the World Cup is not? I mean, the reports we get that it's popular, that Premier League coverage and other European coverage is on and accessible and people watch it. Is it still very much a marginal thing over there?
It's growing for sure. And I'll tell you, there's two things that's helping it. And one is Team USA doing better in international competitions. And the second thing is FIFA 16, EA video games. My son is addicted to that soccer video game. And it's going to be things like that that's going to help that sport grow for sure. Just like Madden. I mean, Madden, you can look at the growth of football and look at the Madden video game and sort of correlate the two as well. So as the video gets bigger, I think as Team USA gets better, these things are only going to help the sport grow. I mean, I played soccer when I was a kid. I think almost every kid in America plays soccer when they're like 8 or 10 years old. But for some reason, we just don't stick with it as we get older. We get into football, we get into baseball, get into basketball. The NBA right now is going through a pretty big surge, and I think the NBA might even be overtaking baseball for number two in this in this country. And I'm taking out college football because it's an entirely different beast altogether. There's clearly places in the States where college football is number one, even over the NFL.
I mean, back to your original question, I'd say that football and rugby and cricket are the closest to the parallels to NFL, MLB, and NBA, in the sense that they're traditionally the sort of three major ones, with respect to hockey, of course, which I know, again, in parts of the country is still massive. And then everything else is...
What is a hockey?
You know, your hockey, ice hockey.
Well, what is that? What is
what
that?
What do you mean? Oh, it's a sport they used to know play. And they, the crazy thing is they play on ice. You know, if you explain ice hockey to an alien that came down and said, what's going on here? I mean, that I think virtually any sport seems quite ridiculous when you actually explain it to somebody. I have fun, you know, explaining sports to friends of mine who have no golf. Yeah, yeah, exactly. And yet it's one of the most infuriating things. I mean, golf's a good point. Tennis, again, you know, if you said in this country is tennis popular, quite a few people play it, of course, but no one really cares about it until Wimbledon's on, you know? And then everybody goes crazy. Golf, I think, interestingly, the Masters is massive over here. A lot of people watch the Masters. The Ryder Cup, of course, is big. And the British Open. But, you know, does anyone really watch the New York, the US Open in New York? Not really. I mean, hardcore fans do. But, you know, so I suppose you could judge it by what gets terrestrial coverage. I mean, of course, athletics as well, particularly the Olympics, but the World Championships, those are on the big channels. And your point, which I think is a good one, is that our coverage in the UK of NFL, it's on BBC Two, which, you know, for Americans listening who aren't, I fail with that. That's like being on ABC, right? It's like being on, it's a prime time show that they're on. So a slot that it's been given. So I think that that demonstrates how much the game has progressed.
So, you know, I was watching Football Night in America this week, and they're talking about the plans for the NFL in England. And, you know, there seems to be one group of contingent that wants to put a team over in England, but they have to figure out how to make the logistics work for that. And honestly, I don't see an easy solution to that. But now there's also talk about at least 8 regular season games in England. Yeah. Now, this, how many games do you have this year? Is there 3 this year?
3 this year. I've been led to believe that there would have been 4, but the Rugby World Cup, as I said, is taking place at the clashing with it, really. And that is played at lots of different stadiums. There is a dedicated rugby stadium in London called Twickenham, which is the home of rugby, but they're also playing games at Wembley, you see. So there was a clash there, so that prohibited the 4th game. But 3 games this season.
So I'm assuming all 3 games are sold out. Now, do you guys do the big hullabaloo, the whole week buildup before each game? Because you had 3 games last year.
Yeah, not really. I mean, yeah, and that's an interesting point, that it still doesn't really cut through. I work quite a lot for a radio station here as well, right? Which is, there are kind of 2 main sports radio stations, and I work for one of them. And it is starting to come on their radar a bit more, and they'll have a reporter at the game, but it's not as if that every show, you know, has a big NFL section, right? So it hasn't cut through. But then, to be fair, or to put that into context, that's kind of true of virtually every sport I've just been talking about, including, actually, you know, it's pretty much football all the time, right? And you know, occasionally there'll be a non-football story. If Usain Bolt's broken the world record, or Lewis Hamilton's won a Grand Prix, but it's still kind of very much football heavy. That said, what does happen is, come the weekend, there are a lot of NFL activities, and the NFL fan base, you kind of, and the interest in the game is very much split in, unsurprisingly, really, into 2 categories. You've got what you call the hardcore fan base, which is definitely growing, which are people that are diehards, that watch everything, get their hands on everything, and they can describe, compare them to a fan base you would have. Well, over here, Formula One, it's quite similar, right? So they're big enough to be noticeable. They're very literate. They really know their stuff. I think that's something that surprised a lot of players that have come over and a lot of teams that have come over, just how it's not 80,000 people watching the game at Wembley, not knowing what the hell's going on. In fact, I would argue, and this might be quite contentious, that the fan base at Wembley a lot of the time, I would argue, is as literate, maybe in some cases, more football literate than some of the crowds in the States, because they're super, you know, almost some of their super fans. They just devour every piece of knowledge that they can, you know? So this, the hardcore fan base, and then you've got the casual fan base, which inevitably, oh, I'll go and check it out. I like sport and they don't know as much. They come together at the weekends every time for big NFL events. So Trafalgar Square, the famous square in London, NFL takes it over on a Saturday and has a massive stage and lots of players and legends come and we have a band and, you know, thousands of people rock up for that. I've hosted that a few times and it's great fun. Similarly, Oxford Street, or Regent Street rather, which is a, those of you who've played English Monopoly will know Regent Street very well. And it's one of the famous streets in the center of London, kind of like, you know, Fifth Avenue or Broadway. And the NFL does a big street party, and they're doing that this year as well. So it's visible in that sense. And, you know, usually teams will send legends and cheerleaders out and they'll rock up. So be watching the equivalent of the, you know, the Good Morning America, the equivalent of that over here. And they'll be, oh, look, the cheerleaders are in town. And, you know, oh, here's Dan Marino. So it's kind of cutting through. But in the same way that you guys all know who David Beckham is, right? And you guys all know who Pelé was. You know who Messi is, yeah. And I think if you went to the average person in the street and said, do you know who Antonio Brown is? They wouldn't have a clue, right? But if you said, right, do you know Tom Brady? They probably would.
Mm-hmm. So the real question is, can England sustain, can they do that for 8 weeks during a regular season?
Well, you know, it's the big question over here, Jay. And the interesting thing is, I did a live event a couple of weeks ago at a sports bar in London, previewing the season, right? And one of the questions that came up from the audience was, you know, was that? And I threw it to the audience and asked them, how many of you want a London team and how many of you are indifferent about it? In the given that obviously they want to see 8 games a season, but difference being that a couple of years ago, everybody would have said, I want to see a London team. Now, the majority of people answered, I'd rather have 8 games a season featuring different teams. And that was interesting. And one of the reasons for that, I think, is because the pennies dropped that if there is a London team, is it going to be an expansion franchise? If it is, then typically they're not very good for a couple of years. What do you do about your existing loyalty to an NFL team and the conflict if you support the Dolphins? Are you going to carry on supporting the Dolphins and the London Bulldogs or whatever they end up being called? Plus also, I think the penny's dropped that if we have 8 regular season games of different teams, you're going to see 16 teams. So you're going to see more superstars and you're going to see, you know, you're going to get a lot more bang for your buck in some respects. So I think that from the fans' point of view, there's starting to be a groundswell of opinion that actually it isn't just about getting a London franchise. Maybe the 8 regular season games, you know, could work well.
So this year, it's being billed as football all day on the East Coast. For those of us in time zone, of which I live in, I'm sorry to the rest of my brethren that live in the Central Mountain and Pacific time zone. We have football all day. So it starts it starts at 9:30 in the morning, and it's not going to end until about 11 o'clock at night. To me, that's football fatigue. I don't know if I can keep that up. Mm-hmm. As I told my son this weekend, the Patriots are also on a bye, which makes this weekend a lot less intriguing for us, other than for our fantasy football teams. You know, we'll put it on. It'll be something on in the background, but we're not making a point. We're not making it a point to just sit down on the couch from 9:30 till 11 o'clock. I'm sure there are super fans out there, and maybe some of the super fans that do the show will be doing that as well. But to me, that's weird. Now, for you guys, this is a different time for you. This is, I think they kicked off one last year in the morning, East Coast time.
Yeah.
So what is the time like for you? Does it change things for the fan?
It's a good point. I mean, I think that was one of the critical things that happened last season. And interestingly, all the games this year are kicking off in the earlier slot. So, you know, 1:30 or 2:30 actually this Sunday because our time, London time, because of the, you know, the clocks will change in time for the second one and then it'll be 1:30. But what it means is that, yeah, it's in its own time slot, as you rightly say. And I reckon that that was being tested last season. I think people wanted to see how well that rated in the States and how it went down. And if there was, and I think it clearly went very well. And my hunch is that if there are more games next season and beyond, that's the slot they'll all go in. You know, there'll be this morning London, American East Coast morning London slot where the games are on their own. I think that makes a lot of commercial sense for lots of people, lots of businesses, including the NFL involved in it. From our point of view, yeah, it's kind of much of a muchness, really. If the games beforehand were kicking off 5-6 o'clock our time, you know, it didn't really, you missed the problem is you kind of missed some of the other games. Of course, what happens now is the fans will watch the game at Wembley and then go to a bar or back home and be able to watch the other time slot games. It doesn't really make much of a difference. Things like tailgating don't really exist over here, you know. So I mean, the idea, if you go into a football match, like a soccer match over here, you hit the pub and sink a few beers, that's tailgating. That's tailgating in the UK. So the NFL puts on stuff around Wembley Stadium outside and creates a kind of faux tailgate, and you know, they're good and they're fun and put a lot into it. I mean, I did it one year where, you know, we kind of, they created a sort of mini replica AstroTurf field, and I had the fans sort of come and congregate, and I had, you know, Montana and you know, sort of heavyweights will come and interview them, and it's a proper show, as well as, you know, they have Madden pods and all kinds of stuff going on. But it helps kind of get the hype up, but it doesn't really matter if the game kicks off at 1 o'clock, they just start a lot earlier.
Two more quick questions here for you. Yeah. I know that all the games have been at Wembley, or most of them have been at Wembley. At the Tottenham Hotspurs, thank you, FIFA. I know are building a new stadium and there's plans for football games there. Could we see, I don't know if they're talking about this, but is there a possibility of seeing Wembley and a game in Tottenham on the same day?
I'd say that again, a game at Wembley and a game at Tottenham on the same day. I suppose so. I don't think they'd do that because I think that would be too divisive for the fan base. I think it would be hard to sell that out because Tottenham's new stadium is not going to be as big as Wembley, but it's still going to be over 50,000, I think. So you're talking about Wembley is 80,000+, right? So it will be a big ask, I think, at the moment to sell out two games on the same day, if I'm honest. Having said that, I think that the Tottenham stadium deal solves quite a big problem because Wembley is used, well, as I said earlier, for things like the Rugby World Cup, which doesn't happen very often, but I mean, for other events and for concerts, you know, Springsteen and superstars play there. But it's really used, it's meant for football, right? And it's a very, football fans are very protective about it. And the NFL has taken quite a lot of criticism for having games there that they feel has messed up the turf. And that has had a detrimental effect on the England national team, the football team, which is, you know, huge over here, right? So that is, you don't want to be messing with that. So this sidesteps quite cleverly that problem, which is pressure. If they want to do more games, I think in the long term, they would have hit a brick wall with Wembley at some point to be able to do that many, because I think it would have just upset too many people in football, which is the dominant sport here, as we've been saying. So what the deal with the Spurs ground at Tottenham's ground means is that more realistically, you know, eight games can be held there, and potentially preseason games as well, right? So if there's a franchise. So yeah, I think it's a smart move. I think it's a smart move. Plus, like I say, it's 55,000, something like that. So it's 30,000 less to sell out each time. So it takes the pressure
plus
off.
Plus, who cares about more Tottenham?
Who cares? Well, speaking as a West Ham fan, I certainly don't, Jay. Exactly. Who cares about Tottenham? No, I don't mean that. I don't mean it's fun. We love you, really.
How about a prediction for the game? We got the Jets and the Dolphins. What do you see happening on Sunday?
Well, it's an intriguing game, isn't it? Because I make no secret of this, I'm a Dolphins fan, right? They were my team as a kid, and that's important because the first generation, my generation is 30-somethings. Yeah, it's where it all started, yeah. And it was Marino and the Marx brothers, and it's a big game for them because if they go 1-3, I think it's very hard to make the playoffs. I mean, statistically, it's, you know, something like only 15% or something worse than that. Maybe teams make the playoffs with that kind of start. So, but I can't see them. I can't see them getting it together. It's a very strange season for them so far. I mean, the press are talking about Joe Philbin losing the team and he's done. And I think once it builds up that groundswell, it becomes self-perpetuating. Even if he hasn't, he's going to as a result of all the media. The Jets, I think, are very interesting. I think they're a good team as well. Everybody said, well, they didn't look very good last weekend, but, you know, they were missing two key offensive weapons, you know, and I think you take out their run game, which ostensibly is what happened, and then you took out no Decker as well. He was playing very well in the slot. Inevitably means that they're going to be weaker. I know the NFL teams will have to deal with injury, but I think losing Ivory and Decker at the same time was reasonably significant, and on the basis that they're going to be fit, I think the Jets will win it quite comfortably.
All right, that's my buddy Nat Coombs. He'll be anchoring the Wembley stuff for you folks over in England on the BBC. And if you want to hear him here in the States, the best way to do that would be to check out his podcast, AmeriCarnage. You can get that on iTunes. I'm sure you have a website too, right?
Yeah, I do. NatCoombs.com and Twitter. I'm just at NatCoombs, C-O-O-M-B-S.
There you go. And you look like Guy Friday, the Muppet.
I look like Guy Smiley, Jay. That's who it is.
Guy Smiley. Hey, Guy Smiley Friday. Fans. Same difference.
Muppets fans out there will know the reference, yeah, but he's one of the greats. I'm a huge Jim Henson fan, huge Muppets fan, and Guy Smiley is the game host, the TV host from the Muppets, who I've modeled a lot of my career on. So, yeah, that's me.
All right, Nat, thanks for joining me.
Hey, always a pleasure, Jay. Take care.